My name is Stephanie Rieger, and this is the second in two sessions on women and power. I thought we would start out a little differently today, and I would ask you, how many of you were at the previous session on women and power? How many of you all heard the tape? About half of you have. Whether you were at that session or whether this is your first session, I'd like to start by having you give me some of your concerns, questions, things you want to talk about, things you've been thinking about women and power. And I'd like to put those on the board, and then we'll see how we can work them into the discussion today.
I'm kind of surprised that the ones that you have said about within the family, it all to me relate to profession or something that, you know, work outside of the home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happens inside the home is often what happens from the outside, but first on the inside of the home. So I wanted a little more discussion on that.
So we can think about the family as a microcosm of society and see all the things that go on in the family. Okay, how are you doing this?
I've been thinking about women recognizing and taking power, feeling confident, feeling adequate, feeling that they have the power in.
Okay, so women taking power and developing self-confidence.
Yeah, that's really related.
Okay, these are issues. Let's see if we cover these issues in the course of the discussion. If we don't, maybe if Penel will stop and take a look at these.
I thought of one more, maybe more personal, but how you're able to assert constructive power, particularly with, it happens in my case to be a brother, but with men who are very accustomed to always being in control. Or,
so assert power with men. You're thinking of it in terms of the family, but were you reacting to the family or
either one? I think in my facilitating male is more than each other, so
okay. How's that one feeling? Okay.
The question of enough comfort or self-ego or confidence to be able to share about share women who have power,
uh-huh,
being able to relate effectively and not to threaten or
some power. Okay, so sharing. Sharing power. And you mentioned specifically women, but we might put men up there also.
Yes.
Okay. Were you thinking about people who are new to positions of power being confident in sharing power? Okay. Okay, anything else you want to put up here? Okay, we may or may not get to all of these. If we don't get some today, we can always get some over dinner or another discussion. Let me ask you to do something now. It's a little bit different. Because I do want you to think about this personally. I want you to sit back comfortably. You may have heard it. Came in at the perfect time. Close your eyes if that helps you think about yourself, whatever you need to do. And I want you to think very specifically about two situations that you have been in fairly recently, in the last year or so, in which you felt very strong, very powerful, comfortable with that power. Two situations. They can be from any aspect of your life. Two situations in which you felt really good, powerful, strong, effective. Okay, I've seen a few hands. I think you already know them. I'll catch you up. If I had been sufficiently organized, I would have told you all to paper and pencil and write these down. Because the next thing I'm going to ask you to think about, they blot out the memory entirely of what I just had you thinking about. But what I want you to think about now are two situations that you've been in fairly recently in which you felt really powerless.
Okay.
Again, give me a big one. Again, I see another, you know, eager to start a discussion. I'm going to move on. One of the first things that I noticed is that when I asked you to think about situations in which you felt powerful, I got a lot of intense, thoughtful looks. When I asked you to think about situations in which you felt powerless, I got laughter and somebody saying that to you. What do you think is going on? Why do you think that? Do you have a thought about that? So acknowledging the fact that we as women and perhaps as men, but particularly I think that we as women are powerful is something that I think that we're uncomfortable with. And I think that one of the things that happens with women is that we, and when I say we, I am including myself in this, give away power by not acknowledging that we have it. We're uncomfortable feeling ourselves as powerful. Why do you think that is?
We're conditioned to relinquish that power to whatever male figure has been our guardian, whether it's father or husband, or clergyman, whatever. Yeah.
We sometimes associate power with aggression, and I don't appreciate aggression in either man or woman. And so, you know, I think that's what I always weigh, trying not to be aggressive, and yet being, you know, charged or powerful, whatever it is I'm used for.
Okay, so one thing you might want to think about is a model of power that's a positive model for women. We might think about, instead of power over, we might think about power to do certain things, or power to influence certain people, instead of power over people. And that might be a different model of power that women are comfortable with. Or we might think about the positive aspects of power too, things that power lets you do. We could pursue this train of thought and think about why women are uncomfortable with aggression. There's a lot of aggression in our society, but I'm going to leave that as a tangent and get back to this, because I'm curious to know the things that you were thinking about. Let's start off with the positive one first. And I want you to share a situation that you feel comfortable sharing, if you don't feel comfortable.
I just wanted to say something before we started that. I think it's not that we're necessarily that you're uncomfortable, that we are uncomfortable having power, but unaccustomed. I think that's important to make that distinction. It isn't always that one is uncomfortable, but it's unaccustomed to the way we've been trained.
Say a little bit more what you're thinking about when you say that.
Well, I guess I don't feel uncomfortable when I do have that power, but I do know that I don't manage to have it. I do find it easier to find a situation where I'm powerless, but it isn't that I'm uncomfortable when I am in control of my situation.
Mm-hmm. I think that women are comfortable with, I'll put this forward as a hypothesis and then we can test it before we get here. I think women are very comfortable with power in certain kinds of situations, but not in others, and maybe some of the reasons they're not comfortable in certain situations because they haven't had a lot of experience. And I'll tell you after you give me your list if I was right in what my hypothesis was or not. But wanting to not preordain the findings here, let me hear very specifically, I want concrete situations or people who you were with or whatever that in which you felt really powerful. Who feels really good about herself, who's willing to acknowledge her power and start us off.
I gave a lecture presentation in my profession recently and felt comfortable and knowledgeable and in control.
Okay. So. Giving a lecture. Okay. Another person? Uh-huh. Is that a hand up? No.
I lived a long ways away from where my father lived and decided in January that he should have a birthday party because he's going to be 9 years old and so I began to plan it, even though it was about 3,000 miles away. And I get my two sisters and brothers approval, not my father's, he didn't tell him what about them. And I didn't really realize I was doing it, but I was comfortable doing it because I'd done that sort of thing sometimes. It was planning luncheons and parties and that sort of thing. So I did it, and it was a great degree of success. And my compliments from the rest of the family afterwards. So I'm glad I've done it.
Good. I'm for you.
No, this is perfect. Hiking up to Lyman Lake. Just felt really powerful physically, but also that to me is connected to emotional.
Physical health.
In taking the risk and then succeeding in that.
Are you willing to be more specific?
Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, I've had that experience with a lot of different things, but in trying something which I hadn't ever been able to do before, I didn't think that I was able to do, and then was willing to try it wrong or right, and then being successful. Okay. And that's in many areas, teaching, or hiking, or many areas of that sort, where you take a risk and then manage to do something which you think you could do. That's been very helpful.
Okay, so the first one you gave was teaching, so I'll put that down as a specific example. Other one? Uh-huh. I'm on a number of national boards, not least of which is the Fourth Life Mission of the Congregation. And I've just recently had the realization that I have a real power to persuade that group. Felt very good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, persuading. Okay.
I've had a few situations in my work where some of my peers were kind of consulting and in the occasion when I was talking to them, I really appreciate it and felt really good about it.
Give me information to here. Okay. None of you so far have said what I expected. So once again, I'm being kept on my toes.
I have another example of that risk taking, which isn't teaching, but at one point I had an experience where I felt that the messages that I was getting were that I was not doing something well. And I believed it. And finally decided that there was another part to it that I was leaving out. And I went to the people and said, I mean, that was a risk for me. I felt that I was asserting myself and not really being sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that my relationship with those administrators was different after I had asserted myself. That felt powerful.
Okay, so when you assert yourself, it feels powerful.
Thinking about family, I certainly think as a wife and mother that I exert a certain amount of power in a positive way, and I feel good about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have room for one more.
I'm on the church board because of my age and experience and length of time in the church, being able to persuade or persuade a vote.
Okay, let's start in the negative side. And since you all told me it was very easy to think of examples, I want you to fire away.
Dealing with a teenager.
Finding Jenny Olton here.
Or you speak in the wind.
Okay. a run-in with the medical profession this year where my sense of what was appropriate to be done was completely ignored and overruled. Something else, right?
I had a tangle with a building contractor and I felt very inadequate in doing it.
Okay, what about the situation where you feel inadequate?
He had all the cards and plus the money.
He already paid him, right?
No, paid him too much. Really cheated us.
Okay, and you felt really powerless.
Yeah.
No specific incident, but it's happened to me on a number of occasions where I'm dealing with someone, say, that we bring the car to be fixed. They don't listen to me. You know, if my husband goes, he can make minor mistakes and everything's taken care of. But I can go and even pull out the obnoxious routine and get absolutely no satisfaction. You know, I start from sweet, you know, all the way up to obnoxious and get no. And it's not just car repairs, it's in general dealing with that thing, the things that a man would normally take care of in the household. When I have to do it, it doesn't have any satisfaction.
From the people that you're
that I'm dealing with.
Okay. So male, I'll put down male jobs to capture that phrase of dealing with the things that men usually do in the household. Okay. Let me get one from somebody that hasn't been on here. Can you handle it? Okay, so you can do
it. When you make some kind of a request from someone and everyone is in acceptance, and they come, it's like, oh yes, this morning, I feel so frustrated and powerless.
Can you be more specific about
that? Well, yes, I can. I put up a sign at the craft studio this morning. Craft studio closed to the university. And there must be like 50 people in the family. And each one had a very special reception.
The people who want to break the rules. And you felt powerless saying no to them.
No, I didn't hear them. And then I felt more and more like a witch afterwards. I put the sign up and tried to be polite. And every time I would say, well, we're closed. And then they would still go on and ask the person, well, could I get this? Can I have that? It was like I hadn't said anything.
So they just didn't hear what you said.
Yes.
It's a hard situation.
I think dealing with people who have more knowledge or information.
Mm-hmm. Who are you thinking of a specific?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of specifics in business if you are, you know, purchasing things, you know, you're trying to negotiate for the best price, but they really have more information on their product and the market than you do.
Okay. So, about price or whatever.
Or anything where the other person has more information on it.
Okay. Uh-huh.
I've worked with companies like we went to a very difficult time in the last year where we had really succeeded in the situation. And the effort to try to get the situation out of the run for a time. It didn't turn out that way, and she and I, and we've been trying to use the Lake County Commission to work with what we've been doing for a long time. And gotten over.
Okay, so not getting a response. In some ways, that reminds me of what you were telling us about telling people no and not if people not hearing it.
Yeah,
it's a good holiday.
Some of the protests are some of the decisions that have been made by our senators and the community.
Okay. Susan. Okay, and again, it's not getting a response from feeling like you're not heard. That's part of the feeling of power.
If you're being charged by some higher also what you like, for instance, the mayor, I'm looking in the city planning department. Mm-hmm. If she says she likes that or that, and we then have to carry it out whether it fits in this professional standard or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how would I capture that?
Political or professional standard or political influence.
You know, the word here is.
Okay, I have room for one more.
Or any other little.
How many people here would say they feel more powerful outside the home than inside the home?
What are some of the things that depend on?
Whether you're single or not. It depends on if you're dealing with people who report to you or the people that you report to.
Okay.
Yeah, professionals.
Yeah. Okay. So you feel powerful over the people under you, whereas you feel less powerful.
Right. Okay. Who created the family? Like, I feel less powerful with my parents who created my family.
You might ask your parents sometimes how they feel about it. Tell me how they feel about it.
There's some sense in which the going to work, he gets stuff done and things stay done that you get done and you get somewhere in life. And at home everything is a sort of a constant recycling. Mm-hmm. So you feel powerless at home because of, you know, I have to cook more and make more beds and, you know, never done it.
I'm raising my eyebrows because sometimes at work I feel like but there is a difference in that. It's not the same one today. Okay, what do you see when you look at these two lists? Can you make any generalizations?
One of the things I was thinking about was that power has a lot to do with being heard. Powerlessness has a lot to do with not being.
Okay. Let me put that up here, because I think that's a really good point. And that relates to some other things we were talking about earlier this week, people who've been in the earlier sessions with me about anger and ways of expressing your needs. Not just your anger, but ways of expressing your needs, your ideas, your feelings, your beliefs, so that they get hurt. So let's come back to that.
Yeah. Can I say more?
You can say as many things as you want. You are much more powerful than you think you are.
Well, that was kind of what I was getting at, is when she was talking about her parents, that maybe power is more perceived than you think, because, you know, she said, well, I feel like my parents are have power over me, and then we also kind of said, well, maybe you have more power over your parents than you think. Mm-hmm. So maybe we don't understand the power of your parents.
Or don't see it.
I don't.
Okay, so let me put another thing up here, which is a really good point, which is perception of power. And there's a talk again about what I call self-talk, the messages that go through your head. For example, somebody, when I asked you to give me examples of powerlessness, somebody saying, that'll be easy. Somebody vocalized that, but that might be something you think of yourself. Really easy for me to think of situations in which I'm powerless, it's hard. Powerful. And then, of course, you start to act on that self-talk and those perceptions. And that's where you may get into trouble, maybe too negative, but you may not be as effective as you want to be because you're acting on your perception, which may or may not be accurate.
I see that power has to do with achieving something. It might be a physical task, or it might not be physical, but powerlessness has to do with that you perceive that you're being stopped or prevented in some way, frustrated from achieving some goal.
Okay, so when we're thinking about power, we might think about power to do what, or to get where, or to influence who, or whatever. There's some goal involved in being powerful that's being blocked. Okay.
that's another point. There's also the perception of when you feel lack of power, you sense the perception of how other people sense you. For example, when you shared about taking your car into the garage, you know, the auto mechanic who senses that the woman doesn't know anything about a car, or in my case, when I was talking about family, a much older brother who has always been a parent figure, who has always looked at me as a child, and that's his perception, and never being able to look as an equal, intelligent being sharing back and forth. And I think the outside perception of what women are is very difficult to break down sometimes. How could anybody know about a car? How could anybody as young as you know what you're talking about? That kind of thing.
Do an experiment right now. And let's say you're going into the car repair shop, and while you're walking in, you're saying to yourself, I really don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know that much about cars. They're really going to cheat me. This has happened over and over. I don't know what to tell them. How would you carry your body? Give me an example. Somebody. Everybody do it right now. Okay? Just sort of imitating yourself. Slumped over. You're looking down. Okay, you don't make eye contact. You're tearing up. Now you're going into the same car repair shop, and you really know what you're talking about. You have studied for the last 2 years a book called How to Repair Your Own Volkswagen, written for the complete idiot. I hope that's owned for many years. And you know what a gasket is and what a spark plug is and what lots of more complicated things are. And you go into that same car repair shop. How would you carry yourself? Right? You're strong, you're powerful, you make eye contact, you talk more loudly, you don't use qualifiers in your speech, you don't say, well, maybe, I think, you don't add tag ends to your questions, I want you to fix, you'll fix my car today, won't you? That's what I mean by tag end.
But I think, at least I find, maybe it's just the part of the country that I've lived in, when I go into the plumbing store or the garage, the man's territory, and I go in knowing what I want and being confident, that's when they are most intimidated, and that's when I get the big runaround. If I go in with a piece of a faucet say, it's broken, what do I do with it? Then they're falling all over themselves to give me everything I need, you know, and they're ready to come and fix the thing for me. But if I go in there saying, I need a flange for my wrangler, you know, then I have to go stand in the back and wait until they're ready to. Yeah, you know, when I try to exert my power and my knowledge, I get nothing. If I'm in there as a helpless female, even though I know what I want, I get the assertiveness.
I think you're
really
making
frost me.
But you're making an important point, though, which is that helplessness can be a very effective power strategy. It may not be one that we want to use, but it's certainly one. I learned a long time ago that
I don't want to use that. I have used it unconsciously because it says this is how I'm going to approach this problem, and I'm going to and they just want it. You would be unneeded.
Are you letting secrets out here?
But they, you can see them standing up taller. You can be, it's okay, you'll take care of it. You know, and I get, as you said, I get what I want, which is to get my Google fixed, you know, whatever. And but I hate myself for being an answer. I think, but at the same time, your point of having studied your book for I cannot say everything to your expert to everyone on all things. So there must be some method of, you know, appearing expert or whatever, or something.
Or appearing okay to not know everything. Maybe the fact that you don't know much about cars, but you still respect yourself and you demand and command respect from other people might be the secret. Do you understand the point that I'm making?
I understand that what you're saying. I don't know, other than through experience, how I'm going to get that.
Say a little bit more about this. You mean housewife, when you say housewife, are you talking about in your own house?
I feel in a very dependent position because I don't have the power of a paycheck. It certainly isn't ever said that way, but when I make suggestions, I'm not heard because I'm just
the little woman.
Even though they are correct,
I'm trying to think about why I don't have friends in the car here, but even I don't know anything about cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because I have a lot of optimism about people being able to do their jobs and do them well. And I like people. So I go into my car repair place and I assume the best about them. And I think to bring out good stuff in them, because I always have good experience with them and I don't feel like I get ripped off. I show them interest and I spend a lot of time sort of admiring the motor for them, and having the foggiest that he was talking about. And I don't act like or don't say I do. I don't know the language.
Mm-hmm.
But see, again, you're putting him in a teaching position where he's able to show off his mind and give.
That's true, but I don't do it in a demeaning way. I don't try to act cute.
Well, I love it. I mean,
me either.
But, you know,
but I did the same thing getting a new sewer this year for my building. And it was quite a process.
But that's what I'm saying by asking in that. That's like, you know, pulling out information, saying, I don't know anything, gee, this was interesting.
I don't say I don't know anything. I say, explain how your system works to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's fine. I don't have to already know how the system works, but I assume I'm intelligent enough to understand it as well.
But that's not a male and female issue. Men have to go to men who are more specialists and are put in the same position, don't you think?
I don't think so they are. So you're saying I'm seeing it in the wrong...
Well, I was hearing it as a male-female power issue, and I think it's more, here's a specialist and here's someone who needs specialist treatment.
Perhaps that's my problem, because I sense that many of you are working and I'm not, and that is a confidence builder because you get a paycheck, which is a pat on the back. At least you're functioning well enough not to get fired. Whereas it's kind of like a fire.
Are you going to respond to that?
Well, I was going to say that perhaps it would be a good idea to think about this whole issue rather than about car repairs, which somehow seems to be a male-female type thing, but to think about the problem that Andrew was saying with medical. I think both men and women experience that when they go into a doctor, that the doctor is pulling some kind of, and isn't listening to you as if you're a person who could understand what they're saying. I remember when my husband had been ill and wanted to know what was going on in order to make a decision about his surgery, they wouldn't tell him. They treated him as if he was nobody. So he just finally, when he was well enough, he put on his stuff and went up to the library there and said, I'm Dr. So-and-so, which he was, although he wasn't a medical doctor. He read about it and finally came back and found out what it was he wanted. You know, she was being treated that way also, although he could perfectly well understand if they had stopped to explain it. Sometimes people don't want to do that. They want to stay up there, feel that they are the people who know everything and you don't know anything. It's their power trip, and we play into that.
My particular strategy for dealing with both these problems, car repair type people and medical type people, working for men and women both, which is just travel around until you find one that you can talk to. I've gone through a lot of friendly doctors that I could stand, and then you just find one that will deal with you. It's a car repair place. I don't know anything about cars either, but now I found a man who doesn't cheat me, and I talk to me, I explain to him what I want, and he enjoys stuff. So I just believe that.
I think another. I think a thing that would be important is to say to the person who you're never going back to again, I'm not coming bringing my car back here because you don't treat me with respect and you don't answer my questions and I don't like that and I'm not going to pay for it anymore and I'm taking my car somewhere else. Because the more people hear those messages, the more it will be easier for the next person. You're shaking your head. I could never do that. I think there are two aspects of power, and we're really focusing on one. The first one aspect of power is the amount of power that you actually have in the real world. The President of the United States, to me anyway, has a great deal of power. The president of my university has a great deal of power. My boss has a lot of power. And there I'm thinking of positional power for people who were here at the last session. Power that derives from your position. Power to reward me, give me a raise, power to fire me, that kind of power. I would make a general statement that that men have more access to that kind of power than women do. If you look at the numbers of women going into the business world, there are lots and lots of women going into the business world today, but the business world remains a pyramid. The women are, for the most part, staying at the bottom. I get irritated every Sunday when I read the newspaper and I see stories about some woman is the president of a company, or some woman is a Fortune 500 executive. The reason I get irritated is because there are so few of them. There are maybe a few more than there were 20 years ago, but percentage-wise, relative to the number of women in organizations, that percentage has not changed a whole lot. And those stories make us think that the world is different, when in fact, in lots of ways, it's not different. The other aspect of power, and this is what I've been focusing on a little more, although we might want to talk about organization and power too, is the feeling of power you have within yourself, seeing yourself as a powerful person. And all those two things are not unrelated, certainly, but they're also not necessarily tied. You don't, maybe Ronald Reagan goes home at night and says, how did I get here? I'm really powerless. Don't deserve it. I was going to have this thing to say, but
and we'll leave that Nancy hand. Let me tell me what to do tomorrow, right?
So it wasn't for Nancy. He looked up at me and said, mother will say anymore. I'll try to stay off that Nancy. Those two things are related, but they're not necessarily linked. The message I hear, that I hear from you real clearly are, I'm just a housewife. I'm a housewife. That doesn't get a lot of respect out in society, but I think I'm doing a good job. But I'm just a housewife.
And it's funny when I go to school and I'm at school at public university, I mean, I get my grades back, but I would equate to people's pages. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful, you know? Terrific out there. See, I know, and for other people who are not familiar, to whom I don't have to deal with every day, I've seen various social.
Are you very efficient in running home together?
I also think there's a great deal of power in choosing to be a housewife. I chose to be a housewife for 12 years during the time that my children were little, and received a lot of sometimes, what are you doing with your life kind of thing. I felt very comfortable in saying, I'm raising, rearing three children, and I think I'm doing a pretty darn good job of it. And if you look at it from that kind of attitude, not that you're also not going to grow in lots of ways while you're doing that. I think sometimes it takes a lot of power to be able to say that in the kind of pressure that we have in our world.
I don't believe you. I don't believe
it because I'm her best friend and I've seen her in operation and nobody walks on her. She doesn't want the truth. She just thinks she's a chicken. But everybody else has more confidence in her than she does in herself.
So the issue might be then why other people see you as very powerful and effective and organized and all those other good things, and why you're refusing to see yourself that way. So that's something that you might want to think about. If we want to generalize, other people don't tend to see women as powerful. And that's one of the things that women come up against in organizations. There's been some research done on women in organizations, and the research is fairly simple-minded. You look at something like a hiring application where a person has to send in their vita, we call it a vita, identify, but their work history, and half the time the name attached to that work history is male, Jane Smith, John Smith. The other half of the time it's female, Jane Smith. And then you have a group of people rate those resumes, that's what they're called, resumes, for how likely would it be to hire this person. Invariably, the male resume gets rated more highly, even though it's identical with the exception of the name. There's a lot of research like that. And women do have, there is really out there, excuse me, not just a perception we're individually carrying in our minds, the obstacle, the expectation that we are not manly. I always ask my students to describe a college teacher to me at some point during the year. They invariably describe a pipe-smoking, tweed jacketed, elbow pad person who is, without even saying, a male. So they don't expect to see a female, although these days they know a little better about saying that. And in the same way, in organizations these days, I think that discrimination against women is much more subtle than it used to be. So in some ways, it's harder to be a woman in organizations because a lot of things have gone underground. But there is that reality out there that other people don't perceive women as powerful. What about having a woman boss? Does anybody in here have a female boss? What happens in your work setting? Are you comfortable? Are other people comfortable with her? Do you like taking orders from a woman boss? Is it harder or less hard?
I'm very comfortable with this, yeah, and I appreciate having a woman because since women have more relational skills, she says, I admire how you do that, that you work here and work overtime here and still run the household with the children. And if I'm in, I have problems, she's understanding if I have to take time off for a sick child or an emergency.
Because she's in the same situation?
No, she's not in the same situation. She has no children, and but she, I think women generally have more sympathy for things like that.
Do you have other people?
I'm more people-oriented.
I see no difference.
Uh-huh. And you're setting. And you're in a medical?
No. I manage benefits and health services, but I'm in a manufacturing company. And I continue to be my female boss and female boss.
Do you have any males here who have female bosses?
I do, for just a short period of time. Well, it was kind of a trend in the film business, and we're building a theater one time. Mm-hmm. I actually worked for him. She's a woman who came up, set up a film distributing business, which is a very rough and tumble business. Mm-hmm. And she seemed to be successful. We sometimes use the language and put a sailor, make a sailor flush. And sometimes some of the men would have to sue the ruffled feathers of building inspectors and people like that.
Mm-hmm. I was curious about that. One of the things that we find in the research on women in authority and men in authority is that the fact that women are female is never forgotten when they're in positions of authority. The fact that men are male is not a salient characteristic. It's not something that people think about when they think about their boss. They think about, I have a male boss, and he acts such and such, and that's related to the fact that he's male. If you have a female boss or a woman working in an organization, people tend to attribute a lot of what she does to the fact that she's female. Somehow that's relevant in her case, whereas people don't think that it's relevant in the male case. I'm not talking about what is really relevant. I'm talking about how others perceive women and men in organizations. So that's one thing that women also are up against in organizations and in using power. That may be different for men. Men may experience differently. Now I'll tell you what my hypotheses were that you didn't exactly support, but that's why we do this, right? I thought we would find a lot of positive things over here when women were in nurturing kinds of roles. A teacher, a mother, helping somebody doctoring or nursing or those kinds of things. That's what I expected. We didn't exactly find that. We found some giving a lecture, giving information to peers, women as experts. Women feel comfortable when they really know what they're talking about. So using expert power might be something that women are very comfortable with as a source of power. I thought we would find negative things over here when women were in positions of authority in organizations. And we didn't exactly find them. What we did find, which I think is real interesting, is a lot of discomfort when women are either up in a man's world, maybe. Because our Carver care tells us, is it fair to characterize the medical profession as a male world? Which is what I would say. It's the epitome in some way. Excuse me?
Well, if you're in the system, in an institution, you think that it was my people, the political influence.
Okay. And you might, for some people, the family, dealing with their parents, might be the system that they're in, that they see in those terms. What about some of these things? We have about 10 minutes left, and I wanted to get to some of these things. What about being heard? Heard?
I think that depends upon the person. Two people can be in a situation and saying the same thing, and sometimes people just don't listen to the one where they would to the other. I don't think that really has much to do with the male-female thing. I think it's more of an individual situation. Some people just aren't heard. Even if they're speaking, they're not heard. You know, they just don't, they're not forceful.
I was a teacher, and I'm used to being heard and understood. When I became a pastor, I went to Tech Studies Weekly, and for at least 6 months, no one ever responded to anything that I said, because the men simply ignored what I said. Then, you know, six minutes later, somebody else would bring up exactly what I said. Then they heard it.
I've heard that over and over.
Things changed drastically when there was another woman pastor who came to the Tech Study. When we became skilled at bouncing off of each other's comments, then, you know, it's like, well, there are these two women who are having a conversation. Obviously, we have to pay attention. I mean, at least we have to not pay attention, but necessarily, but we have to acknowledge the fact that they're speaking.
There's a wonderful book by Rosabeth Hanson called Men and Women of the Corporation. The drawback to the book is that it's written in sociology, so you have to do a little, as we say, English to English translation when you're reading the book. It's got a lot of jargon in it, but if you could stick with it and get through the jargon, she has wonderful observations. And one of the big things that she talks about is what she calls being a token, or what other people call solo status in organizations. If you are the only F, and you are in an organization that's made up of Ys, what's going to happen to you? It's just a little inarticulate here at the end of the week. Okay. What do you see when you look at this crudely drawn circle that I just put on the board? What do you notice? But literally, what do you see when you look at this?
You're outnumbered.
You're outnumbered, you're different. When you look at this,
you're surrounded.
That's why I stopped drawing it around. But you feel surrounded. You see the X, right? You see the person is different. And when you are the only whatever, and it could be the only male in a group of women, it could be the only woman in a group of men, it could be the only white in a group of black, or whatever, the only Jewish person in a group of Lutherans, whatever you are, you get more attention. Okay? You get noticed. And you get noticed on the dimension of your difference. People recognize that you are a female in this male board or whatever. You get more attention. You are expected to represent your kind. So everything you do is seen in terms of the stereotype of what you're like, what women are like. Here you go acting like a woman again, right? once you start having larger numbers, once you get another X in there, or better yet, two or three X's in there, then you start recognizing the differences among the X's. And you start seeing diversity among the tokens. So one of the things that Roosevelt Cantor recommends is that we not promote one woman in an organization, we promote a batch of women. And then that token phenomenon doesn't occur to them. They don't have that same pressure because the token is under enormous pressure in the organization. Where did we start with this? We started with getting heard, right?
Heard, yeah.
Okay. So sometimes other people don't want to hear you.
Uh-huh.
So what might you say? What would you say?
Excuse me, let me finish.
Okay. You could say that.
On the subject of sharing power, I'm interested in what people think, but it seems to me that when I work in a group of men and women, we have a goal or something to accomplish together, we tend to sort things out and say, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. Or if I'm just working, Jody and I work together a lot, and we tend to divide our tasks, and each of us does our separate task. When I do projects with all women, it seems to me that I spend more time doing them together. We tend to talk, we work through stuff together, we do it more as a group, we do it more as two people, agreeing together how we're going to do it, and not sorting it into separate tasks.
Maybe an interesting difference to find in male-female groups. It's interesting, what it makes me think, well, first of all, let's give people a chance to answer the question. But if people have that experience?
I just had a Nyla was up here with, Mary Nesbitt and I were for up here for, I don't know, part of the winter, and she joined the Mavericks. And when they came down the stage with me, one of the descriptions that she gave of the work was that she wasn't sure that she could do the physical work at first. Mm-hmm. But then there were three women all together on the Mavericks. And that what they ended up doing was to sort out that they worked differently from them. And that they would do, the women would do the work together, and sometimes it took all three of them to lift or carry or whatever it was they were doing. But they would all together do it, and then they would all together take their break. Whereas the men, there'd be one or two working and a whole bunch of the rest of them would stand around and sort of watch them or talk. And then somebody else would take a turn. But they never worked all together. And she thought that was something that carried on the whole time she was here. Very interesting. It makes me think when I pass by road gangs or workmen, working on the highway, this is exactly the point. They kind of, so a whole bunch of people are sort of hanging out and one person is doing the work.
Now everybody else is supervising.
Yeah.
It's ironic to me that in organizational psych courses, one of the things they do is teach men to work cooperatively. And teamwork is the big thing in organizational psychology these days. And then I work with women and I teach them how to be assertive. So maybe everybody needs a little bit of what the other group has been brought up with.
Since I heard just the opposite, reading a book, that men know how to work in teams because of being raised playing sports.
Or know that book.
And being in the military and all these experiences that focus on teamwork and kind of goal, where women haven't been in the past. And so they have a harder time working as a team.
I know the book you're talking about, and I'm blocking on the name of it because I don't agree with it. I don't like it. I don't think the research was real good. But there we are. It's gotten beyond the level of objective science. I could criticize their research, but I'm sure that wasn't very good. I think women work real well here. It seems to me that a lot of the experiences that Ingrid was talking about are quite common. I think a lot of men work real well together too, so it's not just women don't have the whole corner of cooperation. But what I think women don't have as much of or don't get as much training in is the sort of using power to reach a goal kind of experience. Especially if it's a goal that they personally want, they get hung up and selfish, who I deserve it, I'm just whatever. So it's a sort of feeling of being powerful in the world that I think women have less experience with. This is kind of our last comment.
I think women
at least the women I know, I am a housewife and a student, and some of the women I know are, you know, in high administrative positions. Mm-hmm. And I think, as a rule, I can say that most women have a tendency to let other things sneak into their goal. You know, they have this to do, but this has to be done, so they take this sideline and do that. Whereas the men set a goal for themselves and are less apt to let other things chisel away at achieving that goal, whether it's a short-term goal or a long-term one. Women seem to let other commitments come in and delay them more so than men, whether it's home commitments or other you know, church commitments or other job commitments. I think women get sidetracked a little bit more.
You might talk about role conflict and all the difficulties in carrying on those roles, because not women don't always have the choice of whether they're going to take care of
them. Well, that's what I mean. You know, so they're more apt to... Right.
One of my favorite things written in the early days of the women's movement was, why I want a wife. I just spend every day as a driver.
Yeah, but
that will end our session.
The most difficult thing is to be provided seated while you are at home. You are not yet earning money, you don't have your own office yet.
I'm sorry we've run out of time, but you still have more things to say. Let's continue this the next time we get together. Thank you all.